All right, we're back for episode 64. As always, we've got Gunny Matheson, Joe Schmidt, and tonight, finally, after months and years and years of trying, we got Bud Light.
Contacting his agent, there's several agents. You've been through a few agents since then, and we finally got you here.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I was so glad to be here that I wanted to dress to impress.
No, it's so amazing.
But I feel a little silly now because...
No, best dressed guest so best far, dressed. Right?
Yeah. And there'll be a prize for that at some point.
Yeah, I hope so, because here's what happened. Gunny, when he sent me the gold leaf invitation, it literally said black tie affair on there. Yeah. Then he calls me and he says, hey, listen... We don't do casual. Jason Van Landingham was the only guy to ever not dress up. You got to, like, go above and beyond. So I thought that's what we were all doing here.
Yeah, well.
It looks great. You're classing up the place. Yeah, I'm going to tell you that right now.
No, it looks good, man.
I mean,
we'll do a wardrobe change later.
No, you don't have to. No, this is perfect.
It'd be like a T-Swift concert.
You know what? As payback, I'll wear my suit next episode. I'll get my tux out, okay?
All right, let's do that.
Yeah, that's nice. So, Bud, what have you been up to?
We've been running around the country, same as you guys, just different directions, and we're all getting ready to meet up in Tulsa, right? So, a few days away from the NRBC, but in the meantime, we spent almost 4 weeks in Scottsdale doing the big Arizona Sun Circuit Corridor show. We had about 26 horses out there for that, between the ranch horses and the rein-in horses, and then sent a couple of trailer loads home and kept a couple for the Cactus Classic that was right after that. So we really haven't been home that long, and it's time to go again. So.
Yeah, for anybody that doesn't know, Bud is, you're the king of the ranch horse business.
I don't like that. Don't do that to me. Don't put that on me.
Yeah, no, I think it's widely known that that's a fact.
No.
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm comfortable with that, but it's been good to us, and you know, we certainly enjoy it, and we're grateful for the success that it's brought us.
Well, I mean, let's just, in a microcosm, how'd you do it, Scottsdale in Sun Circuit? Like, how did your junior ranch riding?
Yeah, didn't you win like everything?
We were very fortunate. Yeah, we had a great show. There wasn't much that we didn't get a piece of. Okay. So I am very fortunate to be the beneficiary of some great horses, and I have great employees right now, and those two things make me look way better than I really am. You know, I mean,
all right, I mean,
get that suit.
Well,
Tuxedo.
Well, I don't know about that, because you came out of the gate when the ranch riding first really started to gain popularity. You came out of the gate being the top guy and never look back. I know when I'm at the Congress, you can hear all over the whole fairgrounds when they're announcing class results, and they get down to third, second, first. I don't hear Bud's name. I'm like, he didn't show in that class. He just didn't show in that class. Because usually, it's first or second every time.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we've been on a great roll, and you know, I don't say that lightly. I'm very grateful for it. I think that it's been a weird ride for me, because it's not something that I necessarily set out to get into. I kind of fell into it. A lot of people have said I didn't pick it, it picked me. And I guess maybe there's some truth to that. But, you know.
Yeah, because you started out with reining and cow horse, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And quite frankly, I mean, you know, the ranch riding and the ranch classes weren't on my radar when they first became like an AQHA class. It was something that I fell into. My wife, Kim, decided that she wanted to go play at it. And we had this Smart Chicolina stud. We got out of the Babcock dispersal. And he was everything you would think you would want for a nice reining horse prospect, but he didn't have enough stop. And I mean, didn't have hardly any stop. And so, you know, we kind of kicked him to the back burner. I got frustrated with it. You know, he was pretty. He could circle and turn, change leads, you know. He was, you know, there was a good foundation on there, but he just didn't have the kind of stop that was going to pay dividends for what we're doing in the reining. And so Kim fell in love with him, you know, and at some point she asked me, she said, you know, do you mind if I take him to some of these little ranch horse shows that are going on, just to get out and go do something? And I went, yeah, Godspeed, God bless, have fun, you know, whatever. Let me know when to show up and watch. And So she was having a great time with it, and I was, you know, willingly ignoring it, to be honest with you. I was just focused on the reining and, you know, trying to build a business and you know, do all that stuff, and it just wasn't really on my radar. And then lo and behold, you know, she gets qualified in the amateur ranch riding. She gets him qualified by accident in the senior ranch riding, and she comes to me and she says, hey, you know, this horse is qualified for the world show in the senior ranch riding. Do you want to show him? And I said, absolutely not. I said, I've never even done it. You know, I've never even truly watched it very much. And so, you know, at the time there was a guy up there, you know, up the road from us that was kind of supposedly, you know, he was the king at that time. And I said, go ask Mozon if he'll show him, you know, that seems like the smart thing to do. And so, you know, she did, and he agreed, and then Mozon broke his leg after the horse was already entered. So Kim says, I got bad news. She says, the horse is entered, and somebody's got to show him, so it's not going to be me, it's going to be you. So, you know, I'm like, oh, fine, you know, here we go. So I showed for the first time at the World Show that year and was, I think, third in the prelims, and I go to the finals, and I just got my ass kicked in the finals. I mean, I absolutely was terrible in the finals. So, but that process gave me sort of an appreciation for what goes on with that event and how much harder it is than what it actually looks. And so, you know, I don't want to say I took it lightly before. I don't think that's accurate. But I think that, you know, that first year, which would have been around 2016, something like that, you know, when I actually went and did it, I went, oh, wait, it's a lot more nuanced and it's a lot tougher than what it appears to be, which is the trick, right? With all our pattern classes, I think, you know, if you can make something really hard look really easy, you know, you're probably pretty good at it and you're probably going to get paid pretty good for it. So, you know, we come back the next year and do it all over again. Same situation. I mean, I think I was fifth in the go around the next year at the World Show and go to the finals, and I was terrible in the finals again. Well, now I'm mad because I'm like, why can't I figure this out, you know? And, you know, third year we go do it, and we show one that that Chicks Dream About Me horse that Laura Day owned, and he was primarily a reining horse, and make the finals on him, go in there, and not only does he win, but at the time he breaks a record for the highest score ever in the ranch riding. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point then that the ball really started to kind of get.
What year was that?
2018.
So yeah. Now, 6 years later, the growth of that class, of the ranch riding and those classes has just, it's crazy. And the Congress, like I think the ranch riding has, I won't say saved the Congress because the Congress probably didn't need saving, but to replace the cutting with the ranch riding, to me, was the smartest thing they ever did because they didn't have a great turnout for the cutting. But now Congress Hall is full. Right. Everything's full with ranch riders now because the reiners and the ranch riders are there early. Right. And it used to be just the reiners and a few scattered people that showed the cutters. Well, now, I mean, the vendors got to love it. The horse show's got to love it. It's good for everybody now.
Well, some reining horse shows that I go to, I went to Oregon to judge a reining, an NRHA show, and they said, hey, do you mind sticking around for a few hours and judging the ranch riding class? I judged 5 days of ranch riding.
Yep.
Went and judged the Arab Nationals in February. Judged 5 days of ranch riding.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, the growth has been exponential, and it doesn't show any signs of slowing down anytime soon. And, you know, with all due respect to the other events, you know, I think that probably the ranch classes are the best thing AQHA has going for them right now. And, you know, certainly the reining's having a moment too, and, you know, its popularity, you know, and its visibility in the public lexicon seems to be at an all-time high. But I would argue that, you know, if what's going on with, you know, the Run for a Million and Yellowstone and the American is the best thing that's happened to reining, the ranch classes are probably the second best thing that's happened to it in a long time.
Well, absolutely. I think the ranch classes are the best thing that's happened to the AQHA because in the reining at the AQHA, the World Show, what do they have? Do they even have a preliminary go-around or I don't know.
It's tough to see what's going on right now. And, you know, I know that the people that are, you know, that are in charge right now at AQHA, they're working hard to try to find a solution for that, you know, and they don't like it anymore. But, you know, it's tough to see, you know, the junior reining, which the first year I ever went to watch it at the World Show in 1992, I think if memory serves correct, there were 120-something entered in the junior, and it took a 222 to make the finals.
Right.
Unfortunately, last year there were only 6 entries in the junior reining.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a finals. And I think a lot of that is to specialization too, is, you know, owed to specialization, because everything seems to be very specialized these days. So it's not just one thing that's creating that, but that's the thing about the ranch events, is it's almost kind of swinging the pendulum back towards the middle a little bit, because most of the people who do the ranch classes don't do just the ranch riding. They want to do the ranch trail. They want to do the working Western rail or the ranch on the rail. You know, some of them do the ranch confirmation.
Some of them do the reining.
Some of them do the reining, the cow horse, you know, the roping. I mean, so, you know, we've got, you know, more of a versatility type mindset, which is kind of what I grew up doing when I was a kid out on the West Coast. You know, I think I'm maybe one of the last generations that actually, you know, did a lot of that stuff, and sometimes did it all on the same horse, because that's what you had. You had your one horse, and you went and you did 4 or 5 events, and, you know, things kind of splintered off after that, and like we said, everything got specialized. But I think part of the appeal of the ranch riding and the ranch events are that you can go do more than one event. You know, you're not waiting around all week to show once or twice. You're probably going to show, you know, 3, maybe 4 times in a day, and then you might do it all over again the next day. So I think there's definitely, you know, a segment of the populace that wants that, and they enjoy that. And, you know, they might also love the reining, and they want to go do that too. But they want to have more than one avenue to go show and enjoy their horse with.
Do you think that the price of horses, being that it pleasure horses, reining horses, cutting horses, are so specialized, and the prices of the good ones have gone up significantly? Do you think the price of a ranch rider will do that too, or are they staying?
Well, I think so there's a two-part answer to your question. Yes, I think part of the popularity of the ranch classes has been the affordability and the accessibility that it has provided for people to get into the horse industry and the Western performance events. You know,
and have a chance at winning.
Yeah.
Or placing, just, or having, I mean, fun, or
take success out of it. I think just they want to go. They want to go be involved, and they want to participate. They want to have some fun. You know, they don't have to necessarily be the winner, but they, you know, they see what's happening in those other areas, like you talked about. And I mean, I think there are those of us who have a concern that, you know, the reining is getting so specialized that we're not leaving an entry level area for these people. And that's the void that the ranch events have filled, you know, to some degree. The second part of your question, do I think that the prices are going to go up for the ranch horses? I think we've already seen that to some degree. I certainly have mixed emotions about that. You know, I think that it's inevitable, probably, on one hand. And, you know, I think that as more and more people have gotten involved, and you know, everybody's, you know, there's human nature is to be competitive, right? Yeah. So, you know, if it means that, you know, I can spend a little bit more money and get a little nicer horse, you know, then a lot of people are willing to do that. I certainly think that, you know, in some respects, the worst thing that could happen for the ranch classes is that it got too specialized. I think that would be the ripple effect for that would probably be bad for not only the ranch events, but the reining and the
everything,
all around events, and, you know, cow horses, because what it's done is given these other disciplines a secondary market or a second avenue. So, you know, I mean, we've all had the reining horse in our barn that gets a little tough to show or doesn't want to stay, you know, as sound as it once was, and maybe can still be competitive, you know, but can't take the physical toll or can't take the mental pressure. And those horses, you know, there's plenty of people who still want to enjoy those horses, and those horses need a place to go. And I think the ranch events have been the beneficiary of that. And in turn, you know, the reining and the cow horse and the cutting and some of the all around horses have benefited from that as well.
So. Yeah, I think without a doubt. And, you know, what you were talking about, the reining at the World Show, the for sure the specialization is what I think has taken it out of the World Show, because the NRHA now, I mean, you know, we've got so many places to go now for so much money. I don't know how the World Show ever recovers that, because it's lost its grip on that. And you know, it used to be paid $10,000 or $12,000 to win the junior or senior reign. And well, that's not enough money anymore to go anywhere. So I guess my question is, NRHA, not on purpose, but just because of what it is, NRHA has taken reigning out of the World Show. Is there another association, and is there a ranch riding association that's separate, that it's own entity other than the AQHA?
Well, I think we don't have one big governing body the way NRHA has become for the reining horses just yet. I think that you've got a number of smaller organizations that, you know, haven't been able to, you know, bring everybody together for various reasons. And, you know, I don't even know if they will. But I think at some point, you know, I think that there is the possibility that the ranch events will splinter off away from AQHA and will become, you know, more specialized. People, I think, are wanting to show for money, prize money, in addition to, you know, points and buckles and trophies and stuff like that. And, you know, so I do think right now we've got a lot of smaller organizations that, you know, haven't coalesced into one big umbrella the way NRHA has. But it wouldn't take much. And I think that, you know, just like when you guys started the NRBC, you know, if there was a group of organized, well-connected, well-funded individuals who got together and said, hey, we want to put on an event, or we want to start an association, you know, that could potentially be the catalyst that gets the ball rolling for something like that. Because, you know, we are starting to see events that offer prize money. It's not gotten to the reigning standards just yet, but it's certainly increased tenfold from in the last 5 years compared to what it used to be, you know. And I think that there's a, you know, a group of people that, you know, they may love AQHA, but that's not the only thing they want to go do.
Right.
You know, they don't want to just show for the buckle and the title and the trophy. They want to show for prize money as well. So you know, we were talking off camera before the show started, but, you know, word on the street is they're going to have a big show in September in Ocala at the World Equestrian Center. And there's going to be a lot of prize money put up in the ranch classes. In fact, I'm told that there's not going to be a single ranch class that doesn't have respectable added money in it. So when you have things like that popping up, you know, we were just at the Cactus Classic, and Mandy Brumley decided to put on a ranch event there at the Cactus Classic. And, you know, it was for the maiden voyage. It paid decent. And I think that the more we see those things proliferate, and we've got fraternities that are popping up, and you're going to have derbies and that kind of stuff, I think that, you know, it's not a stretch to say that it could become its own, you know, independent association, or there could be some variation of that at some point in the future.
And you got some stallion programs now. Mm-hmm. I know our studs are in some programs.
Yeah.
And
yeah, Daniel Patton, you know, he created the International Ranch Horse Association, and so there's a stallion incentive, you know, program alongside that. There's a fraternity with it that's going to be held at the Paint World this year. And then there's a Triple Crown event that is for horses that show in the ranch riding, the ranch trail, and the ranch on the rail. And it pays all three events separately. And then if you win all three on the same horse, then there's a bonus check and, you know, saddles and stuff like that. So
do you think you've been around it you know, a long time, do you think the AQHA struggles to promote an event, if it's the reining or the ranch riding or whatever, do you think they struggle to promote a discipline because they are obligated to so many disciplines? You think they feel like they can't go, okay, this is where we're gonna, you know, put all our money in?
Yeah, I mean, I'm you know, certainly not in a position to speak for AQHA, but from the outside looking in, I think that's probably their biggest challenge. I think that, you know, in 2022, the World Show, and I don't think I'm saying anything that anybody who was there wouldn't you know, support. It was pretty dismal. It was pretty depressing. And it had been trending that way a little bit, in my opinion, for the last couple of years. But in 2022, I mean, it was the first time I looked around and thought, I don't know if they can save it. Mm-hmm. You know, I really didn't know in that moment. Now, you know, there's, again, a group of people who absolutely are dedicated to the mission. And I think that they're trying and they have good intentions, and everybody wants to see it continue to thrive and succeed and, you know, be an industry leader. But I think part of the problem is, to your point, Tom, you know, they can only do so much because they're spread so thin across the board.
Right.
So one of the executive committee members at the World Show in 22 asked me, he said, what do we have to do to get the Rainers to come back? And I said, well, that's a tall order. I said, you'd have to guarantee, you'd have to throw a lot of money at it, and you'd have to guarantee the money just to get started. And he said, well, I don't know if we can do that for the Raining and not do it for
right.
all the events.
Right.
And so that sort of puts a, you know, an exclamation point on your comment.
The APHA show has a 4, 5, and 6-year-old challenge just for Rainers, or yeah. 4, 5, 6, 7. And they incorporate it into their show. I don't know if it
yeah.
brings more entries to the junior or the senior Raining. So,
yeah.
But there was 80 horses in that class last year.
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of the decisions AQHA is forced to make, and again, I don't want to speak on their behalf, and I'm a pro AQHA guy. I mean, I'm a lifetime member. That's what I grew up doing in California. We had some NRHA stuff, but not as much as, you know, was going on out here on the East Coast and Ohio and stuff like that. So, you know, growing up as a kid, we did the Raining, but we did, you know, we went to all the weekend quarter horse shows and stuff like that, you know, and then we hit, you know, 4 or 5 NRHA based events throughout the year. But the AQHA was a bigger deal at that time out there. So to be clear, you know, I want to see it succeed. I think that a lot of issues that the World Show has is that, you know, there's the financial component in that, you know, they make decisions, financially based decisions. And
yep.
for a while, they didn't have any choice. You know, the top 10 jackets went away, and I think that was a financial decision, you know, and people complained and people were upset about it. You know, rightfully so. I think the messaging probably wasn't, the rollout of the communication and the messaging wasn't maybe as good as it could have been, but people were upset about that. But at the end of the day, my understanding is that was a financially based decision and there was no other option to
yeah.
it. So I think, you know,
well, you're getting yourself in a pretty financially compromised position if you have to pull the jackets away. Because
yeah.
the jackets are, I mean, that should be the least of anybody's problem in that situation. And I guess, I almost wonder if the AQHA show, if you think about it and pick it apart and dissect it, I mean, there's a ranch riding, a Raining, pleasure classes, halter classes, but respectively, the Raining at that horse show is the 25th or 30th biggest added money Raining in the country, and not the most convenient to go to, and not the best timing. So it's
yeah.
not a good Raining show.
Right.
And probably the same for a lot of other classes. There are a lot of other disciplines. There's a lot of places you can go and have a better experience and more money for each individual discipline. Maybe the AQHA at some point says, we don't have a horse show. We're a breed organization that keeps records and looks after these papers and helps all these other specific breed or specific disciplines promote their sport. Maybe the AQHA, maybe the World Show. Yeah, I know there's a lot of people. There's a history there, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that remember the World Show as the pinnacle of the sport and don't want to let it go because they have a ton of memories and it's still the World Show. But at the end of the day, maybe it's time AQHA does something different.
When they started, they didn't have a World Show. They had an honor roll, right? They had a year-end title deal.
I believe that's correct. You know, Tom, you're not the first person I've heard suggest that or propose that. I think that would be a sad day in our industry. But I think that, you know, the gravitas and the prestige of being an AQHA world champion in many of those events, or, you know, in many of the Western performance events, has lost some of its luster. I don't want to take away from anybody's accomplishment, because I do think it's still very hard to win, and it's a credit to those who do. The kids are still going like gangbusters, from what I can tell. You know, it's a really big deal to the kids, and it should be. You know, and I think their stuff is still pretty healthy at the big shows. You know, I think that it's tough, because when I won the senior ranch riding in 2018, I think it paid about $7,800 to win. Now, that is, the senior ranch riding is the toughest division of the ranch classes at the World Show, in my opinion. And, you know, the junior is tough, but those horses are a little greener, a little younger. You know, you're not likely to see the competitive depth that you are in the senior, because the one thing about the ranch horses, if they stay sound, they will go forever. I mean, we see 18, 19, 20 year old horses, right, showing competitively in the ranch classes, right? Mm-hmm. So it's an asset to be an older horse to some degree in the ranch classes, because you've got that much more experience behind you. But because no two of the patterns are really close to the same, those horses tend to stay a lot more honest in the show pen than, you know, like our reining horses do. And so therefore, you know, again, as long as they stay sound, they will go forever. But what I was going to say is, in 2018, I think they paid me $7,800 to be the winner. Now, Sean Hayes had won it a couple years before that, and they paid Sean $13,000 and some change. So not life-changing money, but worth doing it, right? Especially, right, if you were already there. And I remember Sean telling me at the time, he said, you know, I won more being the senior ranch riding world champion than I did when I won the NRCHA Hackamore Stakes. So everybody was pretty happy. And then I think, you know, AQHA started having to, or chose to, retain some of the percentages. And so we went, in 2 years' time, we went from $13,000 to $7,800, and then in 2020 I went it again, and they paid me $2,500.
Yeah, that's tough.
So, you know, I had a hard time with that, not because it's all about the money, but because, you know, as hard as it was to win in that division, especially, we had 120 something horses in the prelims.
Yeah.
You know, you took 15 back to the finals, and you took 5 from the shootout. So you had, you know, took 20 to the finals, and to be the winner, paid $2,500. My owner didn't even get her expenses covered.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, when you look at all the other events, it is about the money. You know, right. I mean, the reiners are paying more than ever. The right. The cow horses are paying more than ever. The cutters are paying great. Everything's paying. I mean, really, you know, it is about the money. That's a big part of it. I mean, people don't want to be insulted by the money. Okay, right. It doesn't have to pay $300,000 to be right. The winner, but $12,000, $15,000 off, since, you know, some expenses, that makes them feel good about themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, you know, that was tough to swallow, and I think that, you know, there are a group of people who feel like, you know, well, it's the World Show, and, you know, you got to be the world champion, is sort of the sentiment. And I don't think we live in that era anymore. And again, listen, I want to be clear. I'm a pro AQHA guy, you know, and I want to do whatever I can to help it succeed. But I think that we have to be realistic, right, which is, things have changed. And the reining, the cutting, the NSBA with all their added money and their events and the all-around stuff, you know, the team pinners and sorters. I mean, everybody, you know, the team ropers. I mean, everybody has sort of branched off, and where you see the density and the participation is in the added money events, right?
Yeah, right.
So, I know there's a group of people that are working very hard behind the scenes to try to change that and try to find new ways to, you know, increase the prize money that gets paid out at the World Show. And, you know, hopefully we'll see that get rolling a little bit better than what we have. But, you know, it's definitely a symptom of our times. And I think that, you know, we're going to see some things like in September, you know, they were talking about potentially a 50,000 added senior ranch riding class. Well, you know, that's pretty good. Yeah. So I think it's definitely trending that direction.
Yeah. No, I think that would be now it would be great time for AQHA. Because that is still the thing. If AQHA could figure out a way to be a governing body, the main governing body of the ranch riding, I think that's what they got to hook their cart to, because everybody else, reining doesn't. Okay, for example, Mary, you know well, Darlin's not painted. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, we couldn't sell babies out of that mare. Because she's not registered. She's not AQHA.
Right.
2 months ago, I turned down $100,000 for a yearling.
Sure.
Or 3 months ago. And, you know, I mean, people don't care anymore, because now the reining's gotten so big and the NRHA's gotten so big. And even if it's a filly, they're still going to, if it's a stud, they're probably going to cut him. And if it's a filly, they're going to breed her anyway. I mean, sure. Darlin's got a lot of fillies out there that are still raising babies, and it doesn't really matter. Right. So for the ranch riding classes at this point, for the ranch riding classes, do the horses have to be AQHA registered?
Well, you know, clearly to go to the World Show and that deal, obviously, yes. But the NSBA is an all breed organization. The NSBA has been very progressive in adding their ranch classes, and they seem to appreciate the value that those classes have brought to their organization and their World Show. I think this is going to be maybe the fifth year they've had it at their World Show, and I know 2 years ago they told me they had tripled in size as far as entry numbers. They've got me on a steering committee.
For the show, not just for the ranch riding?
No, for the ranch classes specifically, tripled in size. Now, the NSBA World Show is a whole separate beast. I mean, you know, we've got a rein in there in Tulsa the week after, as you guys know. And, I mean, the NSBA World Show makes the reining in Tulsa look like a weekend show. I mean, got stalls out there by the big giant statue oil driller, you know, I mean, that place is nuts. But they've also been good about, they've added a 3-year-old Futurity for the first time this year. They're going to try to, you know, find a way to increase their payouts in their ranch classes going forward. You know, the Congress has been pretty good about being progressive with their added money ranch events, you know. So there's a lot of that going on, and I think that, you know, it's all a good thing. I think that AQHA would be wise to try to, you know, keep their arms around the ranch classes and to try to, you know, they themselves find a way to put on a Futurity and whatnot. You know, I think that stuff would be helpful. I know that there's, you know, I'm also part of a group that's trying to find a way forward with something like that, a concept like that at the World Show. So I think all that is, you know, is just a sign of the growth and the unexpected popularity of the ranch classes. I think that, you know, it's a good thing overall for a lot of different groups. I think finding that balance is going to be interesting going forward, and how we don't get so far off to one side that, you know, it doesn't benefit the reining horses, or that it doesn't leave for an entry level for somebody who just wants to come and get in and play and have fun and enjoy it, you know.
And I think the ranch riding is the perfect pairing for the NRHA, because we know already a lot of people that do both. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great spot for some people to be able to come in, get on a Western horse in a Western saddle, go through some of these maneuvers, being able to afford a horse, you know, originally, not having to give $100,000 or $150,000 for one, you know, get their feet wet, learn how to ride it, get the love of the horse, learn how to ride, do all of that, and either stay there or branch off into the cow horse or the reining or anything. I mean, I think it's a great spot for people to go either way. Sure. There's people in the reining that all of a sudden maybe they're getting a little older and they're not as comfortable running hard to their stops and doing all this stuff, and they can drop down to the ranch riding, which the ranch riding is I watched it at Tulsa a couple of years ago for the first time. It's way more complicated than what you think it is. If you just the first time that you hear about it or first time you see it, I sat there and watched 30 horses, and it is way more complicated than people think.
You've probably done enough clinics to answer this question on camera, but what is a good ranch rider?
What makes a good ranch riding horse?
And how do you know when you've got done at the World Show? How do you know that you just had a really good run?
Well, I think what I look for in a ranch prospect is, number one, it starts with quality of movement. And what's interesting about that is it's almost written into like the AQHA rulebook and the description of the class. So if you read the rulebook, you know, it talks about quality of movement and it talks about ground covering strides and things like that. You know, what's interesting is that I think when we talk about quality of movement, that can be a little different to different people. And I think, with all due respect to our reigning friends, not everybody in the reigning knows what a good mover is.
No, for sure not.
Some of them, a lot of them, it's not their fault. I don't think they ever had to know. I don't think they were probably taught because it was irrelevant to them, right? Because, you know, that younger generation coming up sometimes, I mean, they can it stop? Can it turn? Can it speed up, slow down? Can it change leads, right? And the quality of movement was never really a consideration if it could do all those other parts. So I get a lot of phone calls from our reigning friends who, you know, have a horse that they tell me, you know, would be a great ranch riding prospect. And, you know, I love my reigning friends, but that's not always the case, right? Because you've got to have a horse that can lope good. You've got to, and by that, I mean a horse with good self-carriage. I want a horse that can really lengthen its stride at all the gates and shorten its stride with a lot of fluidity. So I want one that can almost trot like a hunter, you know, and I want one that, lopes around and carries itself well. I want one that has the handle on it of a reining horse or a cow horse. I'm not saying that, you know, something that comes from a different background can't be successful in the ranch classes, but because of my background, that has been the easiest transition for me. When we start putting all that body control on there as two-year-olds, you know, and that pays dividends down the road when they don't make a reining horse, or when they don't, you know, want to be enough reining horse, or when they need that second job. So if you've got one that has already learned about collection and softness and lateral movement and, you know, hip control and all those things that we tend to break apart and break down and break loose when we're, you know, teaching these things how to do the reining elements, that makes for an easier transition, you know, when I'm doing it. Now, you know, the great thing about the ranch classes is, you know, we have people that come from, you know, an all-around background who are doing it. We have people who come from a cow horse background that are doing it. So I'm just speaking on what my preferences are, but it starts with quality of movement. The second thing I look for is expression. So what do they do with their ears? And the judges in the ranch classes love to reward a horse that looks happy and a horse that uses his ears well. So if a horse pricks his ears forward and leaves them forward, that's the difference in your maneuver score a lot of times, right? Horse that works them back and forth and still happy, you're okay. But one that puts them back and one that's a little squinty-eyed or uses its mouth a lot or uses its tail a lot and just doesn't look like he's enjoying his job, that's not going to get rewarded as well in the ranch classes.
And then you're based on transitions and how you perform each transition, or is it just the maneuver in between the transitions?
Well, the transitions are probably in the ranch riding, that's the calling card, right? I mean, making those transitions look easy is an art. I mean, it's an art. And so certainly that's the thing that we probably spend the most of our time working on, is teaching those horses to do, you know, extended lope to extended trot, you know, lope to walk, you know, lope to trot, and do it with a quick, crisp response time, but make it look easy. And you would be shocked at how hard it can be to get those horses to do that when you ask for it, and then stay at that speed and not pop back into a higher rate of speed again right after, you know, you've hit that transition.
Yeah.
So it's pretty nuanced, and, you know, but I think That's the probably the most challenging part when we convert one from a reining horse is teaching a horse it's okay to break to the trot in this situation. Now I need you to lengthen your stride at the trot, but don't break back into the lope, right? And I need you to hold that while we serpentine, you know, through these trees and, you know, look happy doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot that goes into it. And, you know, what's really interesting about the ranch classes is the maneuvers might not be done with the same rate of speed as you would see like in the reining, but when you have a penalty, the penalties are much stiffer than you have in the reining. So in other words, you know, if I run down there in the reining and I stop, I roll back and I come out on the wrong lead for, you know, one stride, as you know, right? I got till the corner to fix it with no penalty, right?
Yeah.
Do that in the ranch riding, automatically a 3-point penalty per judge. Pretty hard to come back from that.
What have I said forever?
Stop it, Tom. Yeah. Stop it. Don't give anybody any ideas.
You got
Did
to
I start
come
a training
out.
Conversation?
Oh, yeah. He hates it when people roll back and come out on the wrong lead. And I think everybody does, but I don't think you can penalize it.
You have to. It's not a proper maneuver. But anyway, I don't want to get out of it. But yes, I think it should be that way in the reining also. Yeah. Because if you're at home and you run down stop one and roll them back and they come out in the wrong lead, it wasn't good. You do it again, right? I mean, it wasn't good.
Yes,
so.
We always do it again. We always do it again, but you can't give it a 3-point penalty. I mean,
well, three might be a little harsh. Yeah.
That would eliminate all
also,
your stops if you had a massive stopper.
Yes, but I mean, they also done. Score much higher in the ranch riding. So it's all relative.
Yeah. We've got twice as many maneuvers and twice as many things that can go wrong. So
we went to go judge. Me and Sebastian went to go judge the Arab deal. And
Sebastian Patrol.
And we went and talked to Butch and Patty Carter. And we took a lesson one night before we went because we're judging the ranch riding and neither one of us know how to do it.
Right.
So
Butch and Patty Campbell, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Campbell.
What did I say?
Carter.
Oh, sorry. They're in Whitesboro and they were great. We spent a few hours there going through videos of them teaching us how to do this. And I mean, he's not kidding. I mean, it's plus one, penalty five, penalty three, penalty 10, penalty one, penalty two.
Dude,
and there's
fast.
14 maneuvers.
Yeah, it's fast.
Yeah.
It's super fast.
Yeah. It's coming at you. That's the thing. You know, I always, preach to my non-pros and my youth riders, right? You got to have short-term memory, which is valuable in the reining as well, but especially in the ranch classes, because whether it was good or bad, you better put it out of your mind because that next thing is coming at you right now. You don't have time to dissect it and analyze it, and you're not going to run two large, fast circles, and you can't be thinking about, well, my horse is dropping his shoulder a little bit, and I would like to get that picked up, or you know, whatever the situation is. You don't have two large, fast circles to think about it, right? Because that next thing is coming right then, and you better worry about what's in front of you.
Yeah.
So somebody walks into your barn and says, "You know what? I've ridden a little bit, but I want to do the ranch riding. I want to play. I like it. Looks fun. I want to do it." What's their entry point? What's their price to? What's the cost for them to get a horse that they can go learn at an entry level?
You know, I think these days, I mean, again, it's gone up. When I first started doing the ranch classes, I think you could find one for $15,000 pretty easy, you know, maybe less. And that probably at that time to some people sounded like a lot of money. I think the needle has moved on that, you know, but I think that
like 25, 30.
Yeah, I think 25, 30, you know. I think, as with anything, I mean, if somebody's got the one that can be the winner, I mean, they either don't want to price it at all, just like the reining,
right?
Or they want a lot of money for it, you know, which you can't blame them for. But I think if you just want to get involved, I think it's a lot easier to do so than it is in the reining. And, you know, I mean, I'm here with you guys. I'm an NRHA guy too. I love the reining, but I do think that we have elevated it to a place where that's not as affordable and accessible to some people. The other thing that people talk about with the ranch classes is that, you know, you don't have to have, you know, all the fancy tack and things like that, you know, so they discourage excessive silver in the ranch classes. So we don't see, you know, the $20,000 and $25,000.
When you
saddle.
Say discourage it, what do you mean?
You can't show on a saddle with corner plates.
You can't.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
It's not that you can't do it. It's that it's written into the description of the class that it is highly discouraged, right? So if you see something in a ranch class, you know, we're still trying to abide by the spirit for which that class was intended, which is that a horse you would ride all day long on the ranch?
What if you come in there dressed as one of the Three Amigos and you're in your Mexican tuxedo with a completely silvered up saddle? I mean, that might be cool.
I mean, I'm not going to be mad at you.
I'm going to try. That
should fall under something different right there. Because you're being consistent with the theme of a Mexican rider.
I'm going to try it.
Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, the nice part about it is that you can have a plain leather head stall and a work pad, and you can have, you know, kind of a basic type saddle without a lot of tooling and silver on it, and you know that is not going to be discouraged. It's almost part of the culture. Now, if you have all that stuff, listen, I mean, I'm all for it. I mean, I like to dress mine up too. I don't think that we should pick on those people either, but they are trying to keep sort of the culture of the ranch classes truer to the spirit for which it
makes
was
sense.
Intended,
keep it ranchy.
Right?
That makes
so
sense.
We even have a box on our scorecard that says natural ranch appearance, and it's a +1.5 to -1.5 scale, just like it would be for any other maneuver or any, you know, reining maneuver. And your natural ranch appearance is based on, you know, a lot of things. We're talking about headset, we're talking about tails, we're talking about silver, you know.
What kind of head stall do you show in?
A lot. Well, because we have such a you know, a robust string, I don't have enough show head stalls for all those horses. So I would say, you know, if I'm showing 10 of them that day, I would say probably 7 of them have a plain leather chainy work head stall on. Two of them might have a Joey Jameson show head stall on, which That's are, cool. you know,
tooled not, leather, but not
tooled
silver
leather
though.
And some yeah. kind of iron on it, you know, but not maybe a lot of sterling silver and stuff like that. And again, I don't, you know, I think that there's this healthy debate, you know. I mean, I've got a friend who's a trainer in Colorado, and she says, well, what about, you know, if I've got my ranch horse and on Sundays we're all going to town, you know, or Saturday night we're going to town, what if I wanted to dress my horse up and look my best and put on my Sunday best to go to church or go to town or whatever, you know, and ride my ranch horse? And, you know, I can't argue with that. I mean, if that's,
yeah, that's,
you know,
kind of a poor argument.
Well,
yeah.
I think
it's a ranch horse, not a Sunday church horse. Not, yeah, yeah.
I think at the end of the day, it's become a competition. And so, you know, we have taken something, regardless of what it was initially intended for, we made it a competition. And as soon as we did that, we set in motion these events that you can't, you know, put back in the box anymore. And so there are some people, I think, who are frustrated with the direction that the ranch classes are moving, because it's moving away from what it was when they first got involved or from what their idea of a ranch horse should be. But at the end of the day, we're showing competitively in an arena environment, right? And so you've seen horses, you know, we've seen better horsemen and women and better horses get involved in it. And I
so
think
the quality
the
of movement of some of those horses is even probably exceeds some ranch horses, basically. A horse that you would find on a ranch.
Certainly, I think, you
and
know.
And that discourages people.
Yeah, I mean, that they're. There's a whole separate debate, you know, there. I mean, you know, we talk about things like, well, you know, you've got to be on the correct lead. Well, truthfully, how many of those ranch cowboys know which lead they're on, you know? Or we talk about, you know, if it's not required that you post and be on the correct diagonal, but for those who say you have to be on the correct diagonal, those who can't wrap their head around it if you're on the wrong diagonal, then I talk about, well, how many of those ranch cowboys genuinely know what diagonal they're on? You know, they don't.
None
know.
Of them.
They're just,
no.
They're just
they
trying
don't
to get,
even know what diagonal means.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So point in case, you know.
I mean, so that's the that's the not straight side of a triangle is what you're telling me.
So we made something, a concept. We took a concept that, you know, applies to somebody who was having to do a job and get from point A to point B, and we made it a competition. And when we did that, you know, we changed it a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to a reining next week. We could talk about that for a few minutes, huh? You're bringing a pretty nice horse there too, aren't you?
I hope so. I mean,
is it for sale?
No, still not for sale.
It is.
It hasn't been for sale forever.
Oh, yes, it can be bought.
Oh. Yeah.
Go ahead and ask
how much. Yeah.
Well, we got it on
You know
camera.
She did that to you on purpose, right?
Yeah. All right, yeah. Him and you'll live in my house.
Right.
Yeah.
I got tired of hearing about it. I said, honey, just pick a number and throw it at her and make sure it's a big one, and that'll probably shut her up.
So. Yeah, well, it didn't. But she didn't buy your horse, though. So.
Well, and that horse is how old now?
He's 5 this year.
Yeah. Cool horse, though. Yeah. Spook's got a whiz gelding?
No, he's a stud. Yeah, he's been
cool stud. Yeah.
He's been fun. He's, you know, not to get back into the ranch event conversation, but
he's going to be good at that.
He is already good at that. And cool. I think that that's part of the reason why, you know, my wife doesn't want to sell him is because at this point, you know, our reining horses, they may get to be 7-8 years old and they may plateau in value or kind of decrease in value a little bit, you know, as the market, you know, dictates. But if that horse, you know, can be equally as good at the ranch classes as he is at the reining, then he's probably never going to lose value. You know, I mean,
so being able to do both the ranch riding and the reining at a high level. My question, I guess, watching it, I thought, do you think it's good for some of those reiners to go do that? You think it would make a reiner last longer to go in there and do the ranch riding?
I see no downside to it. And in my experience, you know, when people first started talking about trying to cross over and do both on the same horse, there was this manufactured concern that it would teach a horse to break to the trot. And I said, that does not compute with my experience. Now, if a horse is already a bad mover and he's on the verge of breaking to the trot anyways, maybe that's a different story. But doing the ranch classes has had zero downside and only upside for my reining horses, right? We use it almost as a schooling opportunity at times. So I think that there's a lot of value in that. And you touched on the rider part of it. You know, I've got several little old ladies in my barn that, you know, they like the reining from a distance, but they're intimidated by it. And they go to those NRHA shows and, you know, it feels, the big ones, I think, feel a little overwhelming to them, right? But the ranch class is less intimidating. The people, you know, quite frankly, tend to be a little bit more supportive of one another, a little bit more, you know, familial. It's not quite as tribal, I think. And so I think there's that aspect to it for those riders that, you know, maybe want to get involved and want to play and do the same fundamentals as what they would do if they were riding with you, but just at a different, do it in a different way. And I think there's an opportunity for those people to get into the reining horses and get into the NRHA because they started with the ranch horses, you know, and it gives them, it teaches them how to do patterns. It teaches them how to do the maneuvers, how to do the transitions,
how to think.
Yeah, exactly. All the same things that we preach about in the reining, and then maybe they segue into the reining from there. Right. So I think it's a great opportunity for that kind of stuff. And as far as the horses go, I mean, again, it's all the same fundamentals. I mean, we're not running and sliding, but we still have to, you know, extend the lope to a stop. I still want that horse to bend his back and squat on his hocks, right? I still want him to turn the same way we do in the reining. He just doesn't have to do it as many times. I still want him to change leads the same way. I want him to speed up and slow down. I want him to steer. I have found, and this probably says more about me than it does, you know, anything else, but I found that when I started doing the ranch classes, I realized that I didn't have my steering as good on my reining horses as I thought I did, right? Because, you know, yeah, they could circle and they could steer a little bit in the circles, but when you have to go serpentine at the long trot, you found out pretty quick if that thing's actually guiding around there and staying between the bridle reins. You know, I found that the start of my turns got better in the reining when I started doing the ranch classes, because in the ranch classes, you only turn one, maybe 1.5 times.
Well, so does it matter? Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead.
Does it matter, like if you lope and stop or in the turn, does it matter like if you turn a one? Or if you just turn correct, does it make a difference in your score?
Well, I think it's like anything else. Correctness over speed for my program, right? If you didn't do it correct, then I'm not going to want to reward you for it. But if you did it correctly and you had a high degree of difficulty, how can you not reward that?
Right.
Right? Now, the difference being is that, you know, in the reining, when we turn four times to the right, you might use the first half of that first revolution to kind of get locked in and then wind them up.
Right.
You don't have that luxury in the ranch riding because your maneuver is almost over by that time. So, again, I have only seen an upside to doing it and crossing over and doing both. And I think, you know, I genuinely believe that it's made my reining horses and myself better in the reining because of doing the ranch classes.
Right. How many are you taking to the NRBC?
I'm going to take 7 to the NRBC.
And you have some non-pros and...
I don't have any non-pro derby entries this year, so I get to stay at home a little while longer compared to you guys. But we've got rookies, and we've got some non-pro ancillary horses.
Oh, okay, good. Good. So rumor has it you spend so much time in Tulsa and Oklahoma City, you've bought houses in those places.
Yeah, that's right, Airbnb.
We definitely bought a house in Oklahoma City because we realized what a good investment it was compared to you know, what we were spending in lodging in Oklahoma City. I think my business spent $35,000 in just in Oklahoma City in 2022. And so we had been kind of kicking that idea around for a while, thinking about how convenient it would be. But when we actually got to doing the math and realized we're there, you know, the whole month of June, the whole month of November, the first week in December, you know, August, February, I mean, we're there so much that it just made too much sense to not do it, you know. And so we pulled the trigger on one last spring, and you know, we've been Airbnb-ing it when we're not there. So that's been great so far. So I think we don't have one in Tulsa yet, but I think that's probably going to be the next
on the radar,
the next spot, because you know we've got to go 4 or 5 times a year to Tulsa as well. So. When you take as many horses as we do for the ranch events and you're there as long as we are and you have as much help as I do or as I have to have, then it gets pretty expensive, you know, getting all those hotel rooms and stuff like that. So I think that it's so far so good on that. But, yeah, it's crazy to think that that's what it's come to. So,
yeah.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, and Tulsa's really, it's pretty convenient at Tulsa. There's a lot of the neighborhood all around there. Mm-hmm. We Airbnb a lot.
They're all renovated houses.
They're nice. Yeah, it's
brand
nice.
Brand new Airbnb and, houses.
You can be, I mean, you can, if the car, if we usually take our bus, but if our car is parked right by our stalls, I can a lot of times get in the car and drive to the Airbnb as fast as I can walk back to the bus.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's handy.
Well, I think, you know, my perspective was this: for as big as the shows have gotten and the lifestyle that we lead at those horse shows, you know, being up all night or only sleeping, you know, a handful of hours every 24-hour period, you know, I didn't want to waste, you know, an hour of that driving back and forth somewhere.
Right.
So one of the considerations when we were, you know, looking to buy a second home in Oklahoma City, as I said, it's got to be close to the fairgrounds, right? Because if I'm only going to sleep 3 hours, you know, I want to be able to get there quick and rest and get home. But I think that same thing in Tulsa. I mean, to your point, we have a friend who works at NRHA, and she said, hey, my friend got a job. He owns a house near the fairgrounds. He got a job. He's relocating, but he's going to Airbnb his Tulsa house. And by the time we got to it, it was already booked up to like July.
Yeah.
So, you know, from an investment standpoint, it's not a bad gig, I think, if you can justify it. So.
Yeah. Well, how many houses do we get, Mandy? Like 3? Yeah, we've...
Yeah.
And Airbnb is the way to go now because you can put, you know, 4 or 5 people. We'll take 12, 15 people to the horse show for our own. I got to ask Mandy because I really don't know. But
we like having, you know, the full-size kitchen and having the washer and dryer because, you know, I mean, we were at the World Show for 21 days this year. And when you're there that long, you want to be able to do a load of laundry every now and again.
I can't stand not doing a load of laundry. Yeah. If I go more than a few days, I gotta do a load of laundry.
He gets a little itchy in his laundry time.
Well, not even that, but like if you use Polo wraps, I mean, you know, you at some point you run out of Polo wraps, right? So you're like, we gotta wash these things, so... No?
He has no idea.
He doesn't.
No.
He doesn't know.
I really don't have any idea. That's true.
He doesn't even know where the on button is.
On his horse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come to think of it, I don't even think he knows the person's name who puts the polo wraps on his horse. What's her name?
Mackenzie.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Now, I heard a rumor, actually. I heard a rumor that Cade McCutcheon not only doesn't do his own laundry, but someone folds his laundry and packs his bags for him before he goes, and not his wife.
Actually, now he has been doing the laundry at their house, but Lynn will stop by occasionally and do some things if need be, but we're all spoiled by Lynn.
Yeah.
Us, my parents, Cade.
Okay. Yeah.
But that's not... That is... Has happened.
Okay.
So it's not
a rumor anymore.
False. Yeah, that has happened.
It's good to be K'd.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that is one thing we all agree on.
Yeah.
Especially Carly.
Yeah. It is good to be K'd McCutcheon. Well, awesome.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Great show. Yeah,
cool stuff.
I learned a lot of stuff today.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by.
Man, that was
way easier
than I was expecting.
Oh, dude, you won the Best Dressed Award.
Thanks for raising the bar.
Yeah,
I mean, now, interesting. I'm expecting this from now on.
Yeah.
I don't know who our next guest is, but good luck getting one.
Yeah, right. Right.
We better sign one up before we publish this.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're right.
We better get one to commit, because...
All right.
Here's to good luck at the NRBC.
Yeah, good luck, man.
Cheers.
Yeah,
cheers. Luck.
Cheers.
Grow the show.
Grow the show.
Thank you, everybody.